only thing better than watching TV is taking it personally.
You guys, it's taking it personally. How? Why did I just see Danielle's ass? Why did that just happen? I am going to be recording an episode, a full Summer House deep dive with one of my favorite guests. But before that happens, I just needed to hop on here because I have watched the most recent episode of Summer House 3 times. Also, the after show twice, and I did just for the first time watch the Lindsay Gabby episode of Watch What Happens Live, which, sidebar, I stand firmly in my truth that I don't think Andy likes Lindsay. And so to know that absolute opinion that very well might be entirely incorrect, and watch when she guests on Watch What Happens, it's sort of like the secret game I'm playing in my head of like looking at Andy, give her a little bit of nothing at points, or alternatively, act like he's having more fun than he's actually having, which, how can you not? That's like kind of a part of his job, but there's something there. I swear to God, there's some sort of tension there where he's like, I don't agree with you on anything that you're doing, but I respect that you're a quality, important Bravo Lab. My Google Calendar just went off, and that Google Calendar said, Sarah, what are you doing up so late? Well, you know what, Google Cal, I've got to talk about Summer House. So I just wanted to hop on here just again, because I don't know how else to say it. But like, why did we see Danielle's ass? I've been playing that out in my head because I cannot explain to you the shock and confusion over seeing her tush in no way pixelated. We just got like full butt. And I don't know if this is, I'm sure, I guess it's gendered of me. I guess we've seen guys' asses on Summer House. We saw Balloon Joe's minutes later, but less than that, frankly. But it doesn't make as much of an impression on me as to see a woman's unpixelated behind, like, body in that way. It is too intimate for me. I don't think it's appropriate. I think if you're on HBO or like any other, Netflix, Hulu, something else, there was just something about it where I was like, this doesn't feel right to me. I actually was sort of concerned about it, to be very honest, because I don't think, listen, you know, these cast members are signing away their like life rights forever and ever, amen, when they sign up for reality TV, let alone Bravo reality TV. So I'm sure, and they know they're being filmed 24/7, but I also think that there's an expectation of privacy, and it's that Summer House doesn't veer into like Big Brother at 3 a.m. When people buy those subscriptions to watch people on Big Brother like brush their teeth at 2 p.m. or whatever, you're signing up for that. Although even in that case, I would hope that there's some sort of possible delay in case someone is like walking around naked. This is not a live reality TV experiment. This is a months or year after the fact, however long it took, tightly edited reality TV show. She may well, as I guess anybody in Summer House, knowing that there are cameras recording 24/7, she may well have been comfortable with this. I don't know if she was, but to me, it's kind of like, irregardless of that, I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think that Bravo should be showing us that level of like insensitivity toward another person's body in that way. Is that, I don't know if I'm the only one who feels that way or if I'm like taking it too far. I don't think I am. And regardless, it's just my opinion. But I wish that Bravo pixelated. Like, what's the big deal? What was so important about seeing her from behind fully nude? And frankly, when she sort of turned to the side, then I was like, oh, we're going in like a crazy fucking direction right now with this edit. Like, it's not in any way a Danielle issue. Obviously, she should live her best life. There are other things to hold her accountable for. I just think even if, did they ask her? Did they say, are we comfortable? Even if they did, there's a power dynamic at play that I don't totally think is like, I think you should just pixelate. Don't even have the conversation. Just pick. We're not expecting for this to happen. I don't think anybody would be upset if they didn't see her full behind. I just thought it was like too much. I thought it was too intimate. And in the ways that like reality TV doesn't typically record you while you're using the toilet, although we've seen Sonia do crazy things with hers. I don't like give herself a facial or an ice bath or whatever. I just think that same expectation of privacy, and I know it's reality TV, but there I think is a certain expectation of privacy and of limits. Like, how are we supposed to care about whether or not a Bravo Leb says fuck on live TV if we're getting a woman's ass an hour before? Like, Gabby literally swore on Watch What Happens, which happens, you know, it's just like, I don't know if that was actually recorded live or live to tape, but sometimes people swear it's inadvertent, it's accidental, and they catch it because there's a slight delay and bleep it out. And then Andy usually typically makes some joke of like, oh, it's live TV, sweetie, like, calm down. Which he'll say to literally any guest who comes on Watch What Happens if they inadvertently accidentally swear. If it's pre-taped, then I kind of feel like no holds barred. You can kind of do whatever the fuck you want because you know it's not a big deal because it's going to be bleeped out. Why couldn't we bleep out our butt? I just don't understand it. I just thought it was so much. And then when we saw Balloon Joes, I was like, are we actually going to watch them fuck right now? Is that what's happening? Because I already felt so emotional. When she walked into the room with Balloon Joe, I yelled, the first time I watched this episode, I yelled at my TV. I said, no, don't do this. Don't do this, Danielle. Please, God. Also, P.S., if I've called her Lindsay inadvertently in the first couple minutes, just because the Lindsay Carl of it all has gotten me a little bit as well. But when Danielle walked into the room, I just genuinely thought to myself, you cannot. And again, sex positive, do whatever you want. But after ignoring Gabby, this is a choice. So to go in, to see their, you know, flirtation continue to happen, I mean, it was leading somewhere, goal setting, first off. But it just felt like a lot. We saw her butt, then we saw his butt. Then just like seeing the motions, I think that has happened probably multiple times on Summer House prior. But it just was so explicit that I was just like, what is going on right now? It just was too much for me. It was just, in the words of Nick Kroll and John Mulaney, it was just too much tuna. It was just too much for me. But this episode was also confounding because I just, and it was a lot. This episode was a lot. I know that people have been reacting in big, big ways about last week's episode of The Valley, and I love that journey for them. I think it's because there are many reasons, but I think because we knew that something was going to happen in the hallway. There had been such a lead up to it that it wasn't so much of a surprise. But there's something about the kinetic energy on Summer House right now, and also the knowledge, as we know, spoiler alert, Lindsay and Carl do not work out, that there's just something that keeps me like focused and almost a little bit frazzled when I see things that I haven't seen before. God forbid we get content that we haven't actually watched in some sort of like first 45 minutes preview clip that Bravo puts out to get us excited, but also usually tired. There was something incredibly, I don't know, there was just like a spirit to the most recent episode of Summer House where I was like in it to win it the entire time. And again, while I do know that I'm going to be recording another Taking It Personally with a guest, I just needed to kind of like ruminate for a second. So first off, we've got the butt. So I feel like we can check that off the list. This is going to be a mini episode, and I'm holding myself to it, by the way. That's number one. Number two, how do we unpack Gabby's breakdown and Danielle's reaction to it? Now, I could not more highly recommend watching certainly the after show for Vanderpump Rules, but absolutely the after show for Summer House. The after show for Summer House, which is PS anywhere from, it's almost always two parts, anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes of interviews for the cast, gives you so much more, and also sets up, I think, a variety of questions to ask the cast at the forthcoming reunion, which I do believe films here in NYC this week. And the Gabby, Danielle, Paige, Amanda dynamic was so fascinating to me. And I think the difficulty that I have genuinely, just fully as a viewer, is I never signed on to do Winter House. Like, I think I saw the first episode, maybe, of the first season. Couldn't even tell you how many seasons there are. Maybe three-ish. I have no idea. I watched the first episode, I think, of the first season. If I've seen any other episodes, it's been complete coincidence, like something I finished some episode and was watching like YouTube live TV, and then it just went into the next. Couldn't tell you anything that happened. But what I have heard word on the street from people who have watched it is that like Danielle melted down on the most recent season, that she was an absolute mess. Now, I can't really reference that at all because I haven't seen it. There's an absolute possibility that I could watch the season and be like, wow, okay, well, maybe she melted down, but I see like reasons for it or not. I don't have the information, the edification to really include her behavior from Winter House in my understanding of who she is, or at least connecting it to her behavior this season on Summer House, because again, I haven't seen her on Winter House. But I did hear from a variety of people that she was kind of a mess. And I can't compare the two because I don't know what her messiness on Winter House looked like versus her behavior on Summer House last season, for example, versus her behavior now. But I can say that to me, it was a wild and confusing, I think, two-parter to brush off Gabby crying because she felt like she was melting down and going too far without actually asking her what was wrong. That to me was like, speaking of girl code, I understand if like maybe she doesn't trust Paige's interpretation of what happened, but what's more important to her? To actually connect with her friend or to not want to engage in this moment of possible tension? It was an odd choice to just go in there, talk to Paige, essentially say, this is silly, which I think in Danielle's mind was not necessarily referencing Gabby crying, but maybe referencing Paige's interpretation of why she was crying. But it sort of doesn't make sense because she never checked in with her friend who was upset. And to me, I get it. You're having a good night. You want to fuck the balloon guy, balloon Joe, excuse me, apologies. We know his first name, Joseph, balloon animal Joseph. And listen, the jokes that played in my mind about making things into swans and stuff, you gotta believe that's maybe one of the reasons why I watched it a second time. But I don't need to see his ass, or if I see his ass, give me his ass, but I don't need to see a woman's, I don't know. It felt like a lot. It felt like pixelate a little. But we are circling back, but the Danielle's energy in that room with Paige and Amanda and technically Gabby, who she never saw because Gabby was hysterically crying in a bathroom stall, and then Lindsay for a second going into the check on her friend, which I appreciated. I just thought Danielle has like a one-track mind right now, and that one-track mind is like, I'm going to have a good night. Now, I would argue that she could probably have a good night regardless. Did she think that showing empathy or concern for Gabby or lending an ear or just frankly apologizing, doing like the most. You could even make it a little passive aggressive if you wanted to. This is the show to do that on. Look at Carl. I mean, to just say, listen, I'm sorry if you're upset or, you know, I love you. Just do the base level something, some sort of wellness check on your friend, and then fuck Balloon Joe. And again, I'm not dragging her for choosing to have sex. I'm dragging the network for showing too much of it, potentially. But I am dragging her for choosing this man you've known for 15 seconds who, you know, knows what to do with his hands. Again, he makes balloons. Now, I'm assuming he does balloon animals because that's really the most that I know about balloons. But I know he does other things as well. And good for him. It's good to be multifaceted in the fine art of balloon making, which it is, in fact, an art form. But I just kind of wonder, what was the harm of just, is it because she didn't want Paige to win in that moment? I think she genuinely thought that this situation was quote unquote silly. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and not say, and say that her saying something was silly was not entirely about Gabby. I think that Paige was pulling stuff out that was absolutely elevating the situation. But also, Gabby was really upset. And if you watch the after show, which bet your bottom dollar, I'm sure that Danielle did, Gabby gets into more detail about the reasons that she just kind of felt like she lost it in that moment. Because according to her, since she was 12 or 13 years old, her grandmother passed away when she was essentially a tween teenager. And she saw in that moment her family falling apart. And she thought to herself, I need to be the one to keep it together. And ever since then, usually on alternating years, she internalizes everything, doesn't let out her emotions. And then on alternating years, or maybe every couple years, she will have a full, complete breakdown, like an absolute meltdown, where it's the accumulation of feeling misunderstood or not feeling safe, or that maybe it was a quote unquote appropriate time to show emotion. Whatever would potentially trigger her would unleash an array of upset and emotion that wasn't necessarily connected to that one thing that happened, but was triggered by it. Maybe if Danielle wasn't so potentially nervous about this being turned against her and she had actually spoken to Gabby or just sat with her, Gabby would have been able to express that, or at least Danielle would have shown some level of actual friendship and support for this person. Because we're starting the episode by you essentially telling her she's not doing a good enough job at flirting, which she's interpreting as you like making this competition, and then she's upset by it, and you don't check on her upset, and then go upstairs and like fuck Balloon Joe. I just thought to myself, if you want to have sex with this man, again, God bless, do your thing. Again, like swans, I can't remember what other things, I guess a snake, but that's really easy to do with a balloon because it's just really just the balloon. Other animals that exist, this man is multi-talented. But I just wondered, just let him, you know, blow up whatever he's got cooking and just check on your friend for just one second. And I cannot imagine, you know, she says on the after show, whatever, that she waited until the next day when things calmed down. Arguably, you could do both. I mean, there's something to be said for like checking in on your friend to maybe help her feel better. You're just skipping ahead of that and being like, well, we'll have an easier, more understandable conversation when we're both calm. Well, she doesn't have necessarily all of the information available in which to appear calm. And part of the issue here is that Gabby doesn't feel like she's allowed to melt down, that she always has to appear calm. So it's sort of like you're playing into that dynamic by refusing to have a conversation with her or to comfort your friend when she's upset because you're taking the easy way out. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing me with free samples. Astepro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. It delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Living in New York City is not easy. Just ask Sonia trying to sell that house. There are so many mornings where I wake up and think, oh my gosh, I'm having the worst cold of my life. And I realize it's actually from allergies. When my nasal allergies flare up, and that happens when the season changes and the temps get a little warmer than they normally are, I use Astepro, and I'm amazed at how fast I'm back in the game. And that game is looking for Dorinda on the Upper East Side. Astepro always has my back and nose. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andysgirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andysgirls. Sign up today. I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com with promo code Andy. I just thought it was really shitty. Also, this whole founder CEO thing to me was an LOL because first off, the founder page saying founder and CEO of what was, that was, I mean, I was nodding. I know it's an app. Did I make that up? I think there's like a finance app or something. That's probably why I don't know about it because it's related to finance. But there's some sort of something that she's doing. What was kind of an LOL to me was Danielle referencing that like as a founder and CEO, she has to find ways to communicate, I guess, with people on her team or people in the world. But the whole point of Gabby's meltdown is that like Danielle wasn't communicating. She wasn't curating how she delivers information to someone who might receive it differently than how she interpreted or might receive it in the way that she interpreted it, which was like pretty fucking succinct that there's that. But number two, if you're a founder and CEO and a member of your team is melting down, are you telling me you'd go upstairs? You'd be like, oh, they're melting down. I'm not going to check on them. Let me go upstairs and fuck Balloon Joe. No, I think the founder and CEO would be like, take one. Oh, actually, I'm in charge, so I can take my sweet time. I'm going to check in on my team member and make sure that they're okay. Like, let's connect those dots. It felt like poor sweet Danielle was trying to insert the whole, I have a career that maybe is never brought up on Summer House, and this is the way to introduce it. Didn't go great to me. I just kind of thought to myself, oh, this isn't how we want to redirect to a conversation about your job. This doesn't feel like a great idea. Again, sweetie, like, what is happening? I will never get over seeing her full butt. I have to lodge some sort of formal complaint. Like, one must pixelate. When in doubt, if the glove don't fit, pixelate that shit. Like, it was just genuinely too much. I did appreciate, honestly, Gabby sharing what she did on the after show because I think it informs a lot. And I don't know that episode of Watch What Happens that she was on with Lindsay was maybe the best episode for Gabby, but I think it was possibly her first. And I appreciate her voice. I appreciate her time on the show. Lord knows the edit hasn't been kind to her previously. So there was something, while I'm sad that she was so upset, there was something to me like that felt sort of soothing about the fact that she got camera time that I felt she deserved in the edit, where I'm like, okay, great. Now Gabby feels like a full-time member of the cast. This is great. I hate that she's upset, but she deserves this. She deserves to be on the show and have a role that feels equal to other people in the cast. And I don't know if it was like a timing thing with filming and not being available on weekends or whatever else. And I feel like all of these people are always at a wedding. Like every other weekend, someone in their life is getting married. I don't know if my friends don't have their shit together. Thank God for that, because the amount of money that I am saving, let us all just go into this journey and put as much focus as we can on our platonic friendships and go on trips together. And not go on destination weddings, and we will honestly be okay. I don't really want to talk at all about the Old Navy Spawn Con, except to say it was so weird. None of those women have ever been in have been in an Old Navy unless they were, I would assume, shooting an editorial for it. It was so awkward, and to see them like to see Sierra like point to a cardigan and be like, "This is nice." I'm sure that she thought it was, but it was just. It was tough. It was like Dorinda. Who is Dorinda going to that movie with? I think maybe Sonia, that kind of like SpawnCon moment from RHONY a couple seasons ago. Just was like that was kind of an LOL. This was just poorly done. But also, I don't think that there's a good way to do it when you're asking your cast to go to the Old Navy in, I don't even know where it was. I'm going to assume, because I feel like it fits the energy, like Herald Square, maybe. It's just not a place. Can we not get Zara to give Bravo like $50? Because Paige could point to her closet and say, no, this really truly does belong. Like, look, all of my little cousins are here. This little dress here, that little top there. Like, let the family reunite. I wish that there had been some sort of content that felt a little bit more organic, although it wouldn't have given us that LOL of like, oh, and now they're in an Old Navy and we're going to pretend that this is a real thing that's happening. So that did in fact occur, but so did some other stuff. I felt like, I know that there have been people who have had a lot of thoughts and feels about, I guess, the beginning of the episode, which was the wrap up between Lindsay and Carl about this whole like stay at home mom conversation and what support looks like. And then the conversation that Carl had with his mom and stepdad at the end of the episode. And that to me was like the bookend of why everybody was essentially loudly saying this relationship is not going to work out, including apparently Carl by his eyes throughout most of that scene with his folks. Again, this is one of those moments where I could not more highly recommend watching the after show, which is available on Bravo's YouTube. I don't know if they put it up on Peacock too. That would make sense. I don't know if that's a thing that happened or if it's just a YouTube exclusive, but there was some stuff on the YouTube that Carl said that kind of informed his feelings about Lindsay post-breakup in a way that I didn't super love. But otherwise, I was a little confused about the narrative around Lindsay talking about being a stay-at-home mom. Because to me, the way that she was having the conversation wasn't to say, I want to become a stay-at-home mom and be a stay-at-home mom. To me, what I thought she was talking about more was like maternity leave of if and when we are so fortunate to have a child, where are you going to be in terms of supporting us and supporting a family? And she keeps going to the whole like after I, shoot out a 10-foot baby who can dunk a basketball on his first swing. Like, because it's, she did that on the after show and she did that on Watch What Happens. But listen, if you got a line, run with it. I kind of felt like what she was talking about in the way that she was talking about it also on Watch What Happens and on the after show was not in terms of her drastically changing who she is and how she values work. It was to me a conversation, as she said, that was meant to inspire Carl to make a choice in his career and move forward. I don't know that Lindsay is really the best at encouraging her partner's career ambition or lack thereof. I think that it is that kind of thing of like, we're talking about financial support, but I think Lindsay is focused on that, but I also think she's looking for someone who shares her sense of ambition. And both of these people are trying to change each other's core being in a way that is so entirely unrealistic. And the thing that Carl's stepdad talks about and mom talks about at the tail end of the episode is like, marriage is hard. So if you are trying to get married in the hopes that that is going to inspire you to fully adult, maybe the choice to get married isn't a good one. But also, if you are going into a marriage or any other kind of like long-term commitment, let alone one with legal ramifications and certainly financial ones as well, and you're hoping that that person changes as a result of getting married and they haven't changed so far, for whatever reason, because they're incapable of it, because they don't want to, because there's something else going on, you are setting yourself up for a world of hurt. And what Carl talks about with this whole, like, I wanted to marry my best friend, I think what both of these people did was have so much trust in each other as a friend that they didn't treat the other person as a romantic partner, as I hope that they would. They skipped over all of these very important conversations. How do you see each other? How do you see us together? How are we communicating? How are we fighting? Are we able to fight well or poorly? It seems it was like poorly plus. Having all these conversations, they just seemingly had trust in each other because they were quote unquote best friends prior, that set the foundation for a relationship that maybe never should have existed to begin with. And by relationship, I mean like romantic relationship. God bless if they wanted to stay best friends forever and ever. Amen. That probably would have worked out. But to take that next step and not change their relationship was a lapse in judgment and an error on both of them. It's not on one or the other. It's 100% on both. And Lindsay has the ability to communicate, but not necessarily listen. And Carl has the ability to listen, but also refuse to communicate in a way that shows their partner at sort of their worst elements. Like, their communication style is so different. Carl seems so afraid of sharing his opinions with himself, let alone with his significant other, that it's, I don't think he would have worked in any relationship at this point, because he's not sure, I think, who he wants to be when he grows up, which to me isn't really about a job. And sidebar, both of these people have careers. They're on reality TV. So when we talk about, like, Carl doesn't have ambition, he's on a reality TV show. He was an original cast member. He's been on the show for goddamn how many? 1,500 seasons. So when we talk about, oh, Lindsay doesn't make that much money, or she's a content creator and she's only more successful than me because she's a woman. First off, go fuck yourself, number one. Number two, both of these people have jobs. They have careers. They're both, actually, sidebar, very successful at their careers, because neither of them have been fired from Summer House, and they're more valuable than ever thanks to their, like, I mean, apologies, but, like, fuck ups in life. Like, it is a little wild to say you do not have career ambition. I understand what Lindsay is saying. Maybe she's treating Summer House as, like, an environmental situation and not a lifelong one. And, you know, there's a certain amount of respect that I have for that, because Summer House isn't going to be here forever. It has been for, I guess, around a decade, but who knows what's going to happen in a couple years' time. Who knows where that will take us? It is a little frustrating that we can't break the fourth wall, but I guess that's what the reunion is for. But also, when it comes to ambition, I do think that Carl is struggling with how he sees himself, with how he wants to move forward, with how he wants to communicate. To me, it's not a job concern, although that absolutely, Lindsay, I think, has the right to say, where do you see yourself? How are you going to be able to support, I would argue, yourself? Although, again, he has this reality TV show, plus he's making $70,000 at that point in the calendar year. I don't know what year they were in when he was having that conversation, or what year he began brand deals, but to have several hundreds of thousands of dollars from Summer House, and also whatever he's doing with, like, brand work, is, to me, a significant income. When we talk about ambition and stability, I also think of, and the idea of support, which is, I think, language that Lindsay is using and language that I have in the last couple seconds. I also wonder, like, we're talking about wanting to support each other with this very, very high quality of life. Why aren't we talking about supporting each other by bringing some of these costs down? You're in a $14,000 a month rental apartment. That does, in New York City, that makes truly no sense. And while I do not have the, you know, copies of their 1099s and know exactly how much they're making from Summer House, that is an absurdly high amount of money. Regardless, I don't think that they, and same, by the way, with what Paige is planning to pay. I think she was, like, looking at, like, $8,000 to $9,000 a month. It does not, to me, make sense. So when we talk about how we're going to support each other with a family, it feels like we're starting with a very, very high financial quality of life. I would think when it comes to, like, support and realistic costs and whatever, that we are looking at how much money we are spending, which is a conversation between both of these people together. But also, it seems like they're not really having conversations, that, like, it's things are going well for them when they're not fighting, which is a stasis that is completely unsustainable. You're able to be with each other and enjoy each other, and that means that everything's okay. That just means that you're not able to have serious conversations about money, financial responsibility, your future, where you see yourself, let alone your, you know, each other as man and wife. It's just kind of wild to me that none of this took place. What were they talking about for a year and a half? Again, it feels like a lot of this was just based on basic trust that they would make it work, because they got along so well as friends, which is I don't know, to go from being with your best friend who you've had a history with, and then to start dating that person, I would think is like ideally a little bit of a reset. Maybe that's unrealistic, but okay, you guys know each other's language because you've been able to communicate and get along for so many years, but you need to entirely lay a completely new foundation and groundwork, because who I am as a friend to another person could be very, very different from who I am as a romantic partner. And both of them took each other and maybe themselves like individually for granted in that, where they just assumed we got along so well and this is so much fun that we can take it to that next level. You know, summer should be fun. Is this relationship, what is it? Not fun. Kyle has never been so quiet in his entire life as he was on the after show when he's just listening to Carl talk. And Carl also said some shit about ambition that made me a little uncomfortable, because on the after show, he's like, yeah, I've had conversations with Everett, who we know is one of Lindsay's exes from earlier on in the Summer House era, and said that, you know, Everett essentially told me that she was the same way with him. And I've also spoken to some other people, or I've been able to ascertain from some of her other exes that she also put too much pressure on her exes to financially support her, or looked at ambition and financial support through a very, very specific lens. So essentially, it's not a me problem, it's a Lindsay problem. Felt arrogant. I did genuinely cringe at the idea that he has every right to talk to whomever about whatever, but the idea of like chumming it up with Everett, who I know that members of the cast have stayed friendly with and stayed in touch with, and who has himself gotten married relatively recently, but to just shit talk Lindsay, I don't know, there was something about it where I just kind of felt it was a little yuck. It felt Carl was having too much fun in how he was saying it, or maybe it was just because I sensed the anger and or like rage in what he was saying underneath all of this. And because of the dysfunction in their relationship, Carl obviously did not feel comfortable expressing frustration and anger. But I don't think all of that should be pinned on Lindsay. A lot of it is just his responsibility for how he chooses to communicate, which then leads us into, this is, I swear to God, a 3-minute episode. I swear to fucking God. Which then leads us into this scene that ended and kind of landed the episode, with Carl talking to his mom and stepdad. Now, I know that a lot of people got upset at that scene and felt like this was Carl laying the groundwork for how he was going to break up with Lindsay. Now, I don't know if that was the case. Obviously, this scene seemingly had a huge, huge impact on how Carl viewed his relationship. I don't know that he was walking into the scene being like, we're going to talk shit about Lindsay and this will give me an out. But I do also think that his parents had an understanding about their relationship that wasn't entirely positive. I mean, he's talking about the fact that there was some huge argument between Carl and Lindsay on Memorial Day, and he went to see and stay with his parents and shared a lot with his mom, and feels like that's coloring her view and certainly his stepfather's view of their relationship, which is valid and understandable. If your child is coming home and saying, I can't express myself, and if we are taking him literally at his word that Lindsay got upset when Carl talked about their relationship with other people, which to me, I don't know, like a lot of this is looking at Lindsay as a toxic person in this relationship. I'm not denying that, but I'm also thinking to myself, okay, so you had all of these red flags and you did nothing, you stayed in it. If this person is getting upset at you and you are you know, age is nothing but a number, but you were a 40-year-old man who proposed to this woman, and you were saying that this person that you're in a long-term, who you are intending to marry, is telling you that she is upset when you talk about your relationship in any way with a support system that's unrelated to her. I need more information on that, because it's not that I don't believe him. I just need more information, because to me, if you were telling me that your partner refuses to allow you to talk about your relationship at all with anyone else but her, my first response would be like, well, we need to be in couples therapy, I mean, every day of the week to kind of talk about that in a space that is hopefully healthy and safe in which to express emotion, because it's not working out at home if we're having fights about me talking about some element of our relationship. My follow-up question would be like, what are you saying? What is it specifically that she's getting upset about? Is it a characterization? Is it because it's too close to the truth? Like, let's talk more about that, ideally in a setting that feels healthy, to talk more about like, what is it that she's getting upset about? Because she doesn't seem to have any trouble expressing her frustration or her feelings about your relationship to her friends. So are we saying that she is putting the onus of like secrecy and confidentiality only on you, but not herself? And what started that? Like, what led to that fight or argument taking place? And also at this point, I know that Carl often lives in such a state of like denial and fear of communicating and like maybe ruffling feathers and wherever he is on his own journey. But again, if you have all of these glaring stop signs, while I think it is helpful to talk about this with your family, what conversation are you having with yourself? Because we can't put all of the onus of responsibility on the fact that like your parents were honest with you. At what point were you honest with yourself? Why do we need your parents to like open up this new world? Where are you in this? Like, I think it seems apparent that he does not believe that they should get married, and he's trying to force this thing to work because he asked her and can't take it back. I think Lindsay is also in probably a little bit of a state of denial about her own behavior and maybe her record of behavior, maybe in past relationships. That's sort of like on her to figure out, or not, or to maybe find someone whose own behavioral pattern somehow meshes with that. And maybe that becomes a toxic relationship, but it's her choice whether or not to participate and continue it. In the words of Meredith Marks, when it comes to that week and a half before my period, I wish I was disengaging. My PMS is off the charts. Truly, Uber Eats needs to check in and say, it's about that time, isn't it? I know it is. The cravings are crazy. I want to crawl out of my skin. Now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. For AGs who are friends of perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause, Happy Mammoth has Hormone Harmony. It's not just a supplement for women going through those stages. It's also become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I'm engaging. I just felt kind of like people are putting a lot of pressure on the parents to express a negative view of this relationship when it's really on Carl to do that. And the onus of responsibility is not on his mom and stepdad, although it does say something if his stepdad, who is also divorced, I thought it was interesting that his stepdad was like talking about this all through the lens of, I'm an ordained minister, this is my career. I get that. He counsels couples. He has every right to talk about his experience. But I would also think like, you're divorced. Why not talk about your own experience in a marriage that didn't work out? to go through it with the, like, I wouldn't marry you versus here are the lessons that I learned as someone who went through this and does not want to get divorced again. What did I learn about the different partner that I chose for my life and how I maybe changed or grew as a result of that versus like, I wouldn't lead the ceremony. I don't think he was wrong to say it. I just think it would have been honestly, maybe a little bit more palatable for some members of the audience if he had also introduced a personal aspect. And he might have, it might have been edited out. I really don't know. But he was using very, very specific language in saying, do you feel that you're in an abusive relationship? I mean, and then sort of walking that back a little bit, you know, that's a loaded word. I know that's a lot, but what Carl is telling them, I'm sure, has huge cause for concern for these people who also express a love for Lindsay as well. I don't think they're really saying you shouldn't get married. They both seem very comfortable saying you should not get married right now. And if we're going off of what Lindsay said immediately following the breakup, it was something along the lines of like, he thought that we could just kind of delay the relationship, but not necessarily break up. That seemed to be the sort of baby steps that maybe a person could take out of, a person could pull from that conversation with his parents. But I don't think Carl wanted to stay with Lindsay. I think he did, in fact, want to break up. I think that had he said, and maybe we'll see it in the scene, I just think we like need to put a pin in this or whatever, I don't think he would have meant that, because the issues in their relationship, I don't think that they're fixable. I don't think that they should have been together. Or maybe they could have dated, but I don't think that these two people could have ever made this work, and they shouldn't. They're just too dissimilar. They bring out maybe the worst aspects in each other, and it's such a loaded, toxic situation. It shouldn't have happened. And Andy sort of essentially asked that question to Lindsay at Watch What Happens of like, you know, are you relieved or whatever the actual specific question was. And she sort of hesitated in answering it and saying like, yeah, we never should have been together because she's planning this expensive wedding and there are all these costs involved. And it's hard to say that entirely this shouldn't have happened, but I think it shouldn't have happened. And her focus on the wedding is completely understandable. It was something that her loved ones, friends, coworkers, members of the cast, everybody was planning to attend. She had just had the bridal shower, you know, all systems. She was about to go on her bachelorette, like all systems go to go into this relationship with this man. But they were on such totally different footing that a six month delay wouldn't have resolved it. There are questions that they should have asked of each other. But had they listened a year and a half ago, I don't think that they would have continued dating. And the whole thing around the stay-at-home mom stuff was just a little jarring to me. And sure, maybe there's something to be said for the expectation that Lindsay places on her partners, where she just expects that, like, quote unquote, most men, which is the language that she used on the after show, would want to do this, would want to take care of each other, where there are also different ways of taking care of each other and supporting each other. Are you guys supporting each other emotionally? Are you guys able to support each other by communicating and having uncomfortable conversations? Or is this only about money? Because he's bringing in money. And she did close her, I assume, successful PR firm. It doesn't really matter. She's successful now, regardless, with or without it. And she's doing content creation. If he's doing content, or not content creation, but like brand rep, yada, yada, she's like a brand partner or whatever. If she's doing that and he's doing that and they're making a certain amount of income, then what are we actually talking about here with what does support look like? Because then on the after show, she and Gabby are talking about the fact that you need to make $1 million per person to raise a kid in New York because preschool costs $60,000. It doesn't need to. If you want to do what we saw Jessel talk through on that season of New York, you can have those conversations about extremely expensive preschool and how the costs go up. I would argue you can't afford that. I don't know, and I'm not speaking to Jessel, but like to Lindsay and Carl. So maybe we don't talk about $60,000 a year preschool, because who knows if you're still going to be in New York. Like, and also, how can we even have the conversation about preschool when we're so far behind that? It just feels like, and I, oh God, this was a 3-minute, I swear to God, 3-minute episode's going to be an hour. I just, you know, and, you know, I kind of knew, but I just needed to get some stuff off my chest because I was concerned there wouldn't be enough time spent on why Danielle's tush wasn't pixelated on the upcoming tip Summer House app. But I just kind of feel like the TLDR here is obviously they were on entirely different planets. I don't think it was solely one person's fault that this relationship didn't work out. I think both are at points equally responsible, because if someone is behaving in a way that you don't agree with or respect, why are we pushing this so hard? Is it solely if you weren't engaged, would you still be together? I would be shocked if the answer was yes. I think the only thing keeping them together at this point is the fact that she has a ring. And that's not a great indicator of a marriage that's going to work out, let alone like a boyfriend-girlfriend dynamic. And I don't think this is a situation of like, this is entirely on Lindsay, although we have seen repeated examples of Lindsay's stuff in relationships and maybe when she's not. And we've also seen examples of Carl in a very, very different way, needing to do some additional work. And there genuinely isn't anger present in both of them on the after show. I don't want to just say it's Carl. Obviously, Lindsay was dumped. Carl's upset about the relationship he seemingly found himself in, or maybe upset at himself for staying in it so long, maybe upset at himself for proposing. I don't know. I think that there's some shared responsibility here. I do think the reunion's going to be fucking insane. And I guess that they were both at a destination wedding. I want to say it was in Portugal, but I might be pulling that out of my ass. I'm sure I am. And an ass that you will not see unpixelated on reality TV. There's going to be a giant fucking box. And I love my tush, but you're just not going to see it. It's just not going to happen. So they were at a destination wedding, I think, in Portugal. And, you know, we're both there and we're surrounded by friends and didn't have to communicate, nor have they communicated with each other. And I just think we're ramping up with the press that they've done, with just the episodes that are airing, with a general sense of tension in the air for a gangbusters wild fucking reunion. And I just don't think this is like entirely on one person or the other. There's a lot of joint stuff here that hopefully these people choose to work on themselves before jumping into a relationship. Lindsay has mentioned that she like brought a date to that destination wedding and he's someone special in her life. So I don't know. Sometimes the hope is that like people work on themselves, because maybe the goal is to have, you know, a committed, healthy relationship, but that's not everybody's goal. And that's why a lot of these people are on reality TV, because the number one focus isn't figuring out the ingredients for a quote unquote healthy relationship, or healthy relationship that just or a relationship that just requires work. Because we use the word health, myself included, in a way that can almost be dismissive for the reality of what a relationship could look like. Now, I would argue that calling the relationship toxic is like the most generous use of the word. I mean, there's a lot of other words that a person could assign or use to define their dynamics together. I have no problem calling it toxic, and neither should they. And the fact that Lindsay's jumped in with some new beau is Lindsay. And, you know, that's why she's great on reality TV and maybe not great in a relationship. And Carl has some shit and some answers that hopefully he asks himself, maybe he's working on now. I mean, we've seen Carl since day one. This whole thing of like not knowing where he wants to be professionally, we've seen ad nauseum for several years. That's something that a lot of people go through. That's something that people go through now that they might not have gone through before, of just hitting a breaking point of like, who am I? How am I expressing myself? Is that connected with what I'm doing as a like quote unquote 9 to 5? And how can I change it? A lot of people are lost. I don't think COVID helped in any way with anyone. It was like this almost stunted adolescence that was thrust in the middle of for several years for a lot of people, being like, the literal world turned entirely upside down. People's jobs became non-existent, or inverted in some fashion. And a lot of people are still, and maybe just now, kind of catching their breath. We haven't heard that as an explainer for Carl, but just to say he is not the only person in the universe who's reached a certain point in his life and or career and said, you know, what am I doing here? Better, I think he's asking these questions now and trying to figure it out. I don't know if he is trying to figure it out. He's, you know, back to Loverboy, working on a non-alcoholic drink line. I think that's a great idea. And maybe he's just, you know, it's like Danielle uses the phrase founder and CEO. Not everybody wants to be a founder and CEO. So to expect that, to like think about a person's drive, Carl's drive might not be in work. His drive might come out in other forms of his life. His drive, maybe one day he will be able to connect if he wants to and monetize some aspect of helping other people with recovery. Like maybe that's an avenue he'll want to go down, or maybe he'll want to keep it entirely separate. But he does have drive and ambition and goals that he's able to achieve in his life that's not necessarily connected to the office job or like LinkedIn profile that Lindsay would maybe define as success. But that's Lindsay's definition. Carl needs to focus on his own. And maybe he's getting there, maybe he's not. It's no longer Lindsay's responsibility. Good for her. And the same can be said for Carl. The difficulty with that reunion is like both of these people are going to be dragging each other to hell because of some of those definitions. And it's going to be a goddamn mess. And I can't wait to watch it. I'm going to watch it 16 times and can't wait to hear, you know, things that'll creep out. Lord only knows what that day will look like in New York. I think they're going to shut it down. Like when POTUS is in town or whatever, it's just every street's going to be closed. You know, we're going to have people in an absolute standstill, can't cross Third Avenue until we hear what is going on with Lindsay and Carl. And God bless us for that. Listen, thanks so much for listening to this 2-minute episode. I really just had to do it. I had to. It's super late at night, but I had, and I am recording now in a couple hours, but I just really had to get a couple things out. I'm curious for your thoughts. I don't know how my stammering went when it comes to all things Carl and Lindsay and identity. And the idea of like connecting identity and stability and ambition with a career and a 1099 and a salary, because also that kind of ebbs and flows and one person's definition is not another. But also I understand Lindsay's interest in making sure that Carl feels that he can provide stability and support. She has the right to look for that in a partner. He just obviously was not the partner for her. At the end of the day, it's not necessarily about litigating what looks right for a person in their definition of adulting. It's just like, who is the better fit? These two people did not fit together. So rather than saying what Lindsay is looking for is wrong, which is what Carl's talking about in the after show, he can say whatever the fuck he wants. They're no longer together. So however he wants to judge her and she wants to judge him. And, you know, that is a part of the conversations that happen on AG and Tip, is like talking about that. But I'm not in a position to say what this person is doing is entirely wrong. I think there's a lot of complications here in like what a person is looking for in a partner. What does support look like? And how do you literally identify who you're going to be at work, at home, in bed, whatever else? Just pixelate my tush, okay? At the end of the day, that's all I ask for. Listen, have you signed up for the Andy's Girls Patreon? Number one way to support the pod. I'm recording this so late at night, but I do know there are going to be two new Patreon episodes up tomorrow afternoon, also known probably tomorrow night, also known as Tuesday PM. So you can sign up for the AG Patreon and get a ton in archive, a library plus of all of the bonus episodes in the world. It's the number one way to support the pod at patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Follow me on Instagram at allegedly threads at Dame Galley, and thanks so much for listening to this. You know, some things were said. I think I said a couple things. I mentioned un petit peu. Oh my God, is that how you say it in French? Oh Lord, help me. But I'm curious for your thoughts. So let me know in the little social graphic for this episode, and send me your satchels of gold. Let me know your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about all things Summer House, Pump Rules, the absolute lack of Housewives content that we have right now. I did listen to Alexia and Marisol's a very special podcast episode of Ay Por Favor and have some thoughts on that. So if you have listened or not, DM me your Sachets of Gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, but all things Bravo, Housewives, other stuff. Let me know. They may be featured and unpacked in an upcoming Patreon episode. On that note, which I do always say for 15 times, 15 times, LOL, 15 times. Good evening, good night, and good luck. Thanks for listening, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.